This week on the RV Podcast, some great advice and tips from an expert on how to find the perfect campsite for your RV without reservations.
9 times out of 10, this is my experience. This is why I don't make reservations. Hey, my name is Mark. I've got a 44-foot fifth wheel. I'm looking for a site for tomorrow, Saturday, you know, Friday night and Saturday at your park. 9 times out of 10, this is their response. Well, I just had a cancellation. We got a site for you. Perfect. Book it. You know, that's 9 times out of 10.
Welcome, fellow travelers. It's time for another episode of the RV Podcast.
Answering your questions, sharing tips, suggesting great trips and off-the-beaten-path adventures, and always staying on top of the RV lifestyle news you need to know about with great interviews and inside industry information.
Here's your hosts, award-winning journalists Mike and Jennifer Wendland.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the RV Podcast. And it doesn't make any difference what kind of an RV you have, whether it is a motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent, even if you're just dreaming about getting an RV. This show is for you because right here we talk about getting out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, discovering fun places, and of course, always using the right gear and technology to enhance the RV lifestyle. So welcome. We are very honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. Coming up in our interview of the week, some great advice from an expert on finding RV campsites without advanced reservations. We have lots of RV news for you this week. We have RV lifestyle tips, questions and answers and comments about past episodes, and a great off-the-beaten-path report from the Burkitts. But first, my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hi, my dear.
Hello, Michael.
Well, we're coming to everybody this week again from the beautiful Emerald Coast on the Northwest Florida Panhandle. It was a lot of fun, and we've been here a couple of weeks, and we'll be heading back to Michigan to begin a very busy fall travel season in just a few days. But it's been great, hasn't it?
It's been very warm and humid and beautiful out, beautiful blue sky, delightful.
We had a great meet and greet gathering this past Sunday, not too far from us here in the Gulf Islands National Seashore. That's administered by the National Park Service,
And that is such a beautiful area. If you haven't been there, you need to go there.
I think every time we come down here, we try and do one of those, and we tend to have them out there. And
yeah, we tend to be out there on the weekend. We should go out during the week. I bet nobody's there.
It wasn't bad, though. Even though it was a Labor Day weekend, it wasn't that crowded. We had a sunscreen pavilion over our heads. We had, I think, 14 people I counted that came, some from 150 miles away to enjoy us. All different kinds of RVs that were represented by those who came, too.
It was just a nice little pleasant get-together. And then we went out for dinner, and that made it even nicer.
Oh, yeah, Dewey Destin's. That's our favorite little seafood place there in Navarre Beach, Florida. Their fresh shrimp basket. Shrimp down here, just, out of sight, fantastic. I think we've had shrimp 3 or 4 times, and we've only been here a couple of weeks, but I can't eat it anyplace else because it is so nice and fresh. Like Jennifer says, the weather's been hot and humid. We've been going back and forth to Georgia, to Southwest Georgia, where our grandson, Matthew, is in his senior year and playing football for the Deerfield Windsor Knights. And some of those games, kickoff, the temperature is close to 100 degrees. I don't know how they do it.
I don't know how they do either, but they do it.
We did, we traveled I-10 east to I-75 and then up, and both on I-10 and on I-75, we just noticed so many utility vehicles and ambulances that were heading down for Hurricane Dorian, which was menacing the Gulf Coast of Florida, or the Atlantic Coast of Florida. It turned out that it's headed further north, but it's still going to be a storm to contend with further up the eastern seaboard. But I was just so impressed, weren't you, with all that emergency help that was heading down to be there if that hurricane came ashore as a Category 5, which they at first thought it was?
So many trucks, so many people willing to help.
Yeah, that makes you feel good about that. A lot of people were worried about us. We were never really in the crosshairs, although anything is possible, you know, in hurricane season down here in Florida. But we've had nothing but sunny skies, and we're recording this, of course, on Tuesday, the day before it releases, on the 4th of September. And as soon as we recover, we record it, I'm going to go outside and see if I can get an hour of beach time in.
Yeah, the first day I went out to go to the beach, I lasted 15 minutes.
Oh my gosh, it was
hot. The young man in charge of the beach chairs just laughed. He said, "You said you wouldn't last long." And I said, "No, I kind of melt."
Yeah, it really is hot. And there's a breeze down there.
Today, it looks like there's a breeze.
Do you know that most of those people out on the beach think it's cooler here? Because they're coming from Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama.
They're sitting out there laying right in that sun. I've got the umbrella over me and sunglasses and a hat.
And the water is 86, 88 degrees, almost 90 degrees some days. It's just crazy hot. But it's beautiful. And in a little bit of time, it'll start to cool off. And then our favorite month down here is mid-October to mid-November. It's just absolutely perfect. But anyway, we're getting ready, as I said at the top, for our fall RV show season. And are you ready for that? It starts, we get home to Michigan to unpack and repack. And we have to leave right away for Hershey, Pennsylvania next week.
I always like the Hershey show.
Yep, they bill that as America's largest RV show, and we'll be looking at all the new RVs for you and doing meet and greets with everybody that we can say hi to that wants to hook up with us down there. If you are attending the Hershey show, we will be hanging out with our friends at the Leisure Travel Vans display. So come by and say hello. We're going to do a live YouTube broadcast from there, I think on
Saturday.
A week from Saturday, this coming Saturday. So we'll tell you more about that in next week's podcast. But
and you know what I really like about that show is we have our RV. So at lunchtime, we can go to our RV and lay down for a second.
Turn the AC on.
Turn
it's always
hot.
Turn
the air conditioning on. Yep. Have our lunch and just relax.
Yeah, we've done that
for
now
a little bit.
And it's kind of hard to relax because right on the other side of us is that Hershey Candy Museum where you can go get all the free chocolate samples, you know?
And the chocolate is better at Hershey.
It's fresher, right?
Well, I know they make most of it
in Mexico.
Other places.
No, yeah.
But I think they do make some in Hershey.
The whole town smells of chocolate.
Yeah.
And RVs, because there's 1,000+ RVs there. Anyway, that's next week, and if you can get there, it's a fun show. It's a big event in and of itself.
And they got to check, because isn't there a free day or senior discount day?
I think it's
different
Tuesday.
Discounts?
Yeah, I think it's Tuesday next week.
No, I don't think it starts till
Tuesday, Wednesday?
Wednesday,
I don't know.
Thursday. I thought Thursday was some kind of special day. Might be wrong.
It might be. One thing about Hershey, though, we need to point out to people, dogs are not welcome there. So don't bring your dogs if you're going to Hershey. They, for insurance reasons or whatever, at the venue that they have, the Hershey show, they do not allow dogs. And that's not like what we'll see in October when we go out to California, the California RV show. Dogs are very welcome there.
Or in Tampa.
And at the Tampa show down there, the RV Super Show in Tampa in January. Dogs are very welcome there, but not at Hershey. So that's what we have been up to this week.
News. Mike's got news. RV news, travel news, inside information and trends that shape the RV lifestyle. Here's the RV news of the week.
All right, here's a story for those of you like us who have electric bikes. Electric bikes soon will be permitted on trails in the U.S. national parks. Last week, President Donald Trump signed an order permitting e-bikes, as they are just about everywhere else, to be classified the same as bicycles, which means now that they can go on every federal trail, just like regular bikes. E-bikes, if you don't know what they are, they're bicycles that also have a small little electric motor that will help power the pedals. There's a little battery on it, and it kind of assists people who maybe would just like a little bit of help, a little assistance with pedaling. They're really fun. The move got a lot of opposition from hiking and horse riding and other outdoor groups who were concerned that the electric powered bikes would cause people to go too fast and fundamentally change the experience on the trails. Personally, we're kind of biased. Jen and I both have had e-bikes for some time, and we do enjoy them. We use them as regular bicycles and only use the assistance when we want a little help going up a hill. But we'll put a link to a video that we did some time back that explains how they work. So look in the show notes for this episode, which you'll find at RVLifestyle.com/258.
If you're heading to Yosemite National Park this fall, be on the lookout for signs marking wildlife protection zones. So far this year, 11 bears have been hit by vehicles in the park. The zones were established to reduce collisions with wildlife, be it bears, butterflies, foxes, deer, or other creatures. The wildlife protection zones will have a slower speed limit, and officials will be strictly enforcing it in the hopes of preventing more loss of life.
There's a fun article we saw this week looking at camping 100 years ago. It was filled with a lot of pictures, and it talked about tin can tourists, their original nickname, and the early days of RV travel. Showed how when cars were new, the national parks did not have official campgrounds. People would just drive in and set up camp wherever they wanted, even on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. It was really a fun read, and we got the link, and we'll put it in the show notes for me. But it got me thinking back to the amazing display of early campers that you can see at the RV Hall of Fame and Museum in Elkhart, Indiana. Remember that last year?
That was fun.
It was really interesting to look at. I think Henry Ford and Thomas Edison, there's some pictures of them and the vehicle they went camping in. And we did a video and an article on it on the blog, and we'll put a link to it. But and if you are anywhere near Elkhart, visit that RV Hall of Fame and Museum. It's a fascinating place.
And I was so happy that we got to go there, because I had wanted to go there, and then it worked out so we could go there, and it met all my expectations.
Yeah, it's quite a place. It's well worth your time if you're anywhere near Elkhart to spend a few hours and visit the RV Hall of Fame. It's a very cool place.
A pipeline break in Grand Canyon National Park caused the park to mandate strict water conservation measures in both the north and south rims that include eliminating water services at some of the campgrounds. The break happened last Thursday, and until it's fixed, the entire park will be on a conservation mode. The pipeline provides water to both the park's 6 million annual visitors and some 2,500 park residents. If you're heading that way this week, be sure to check in with the park for the latest on the water situation.
And some short RV news that we'll put links to in the show notes as well. Zion National Park, they have closed a couple of trails indefinitely. They had a rock slide that injured three people, actually. So if you're heading to Zion National Park, be sure and check that, because a couple of trails have been closed indefinitely as they're trying to clear up a rock slide. Yellowstone National Park, the old historic Mammoth Hotel, has reopened after 4 years and $30 million of renovation. So that's good news. It's a beautiful old hotel with lots of history. Check it out. The Mammoth Hotel Yellowstone, now back open. And at Rocky Mountain National Park, always one of the more popular parks, officials are proposing several price changes, including raising camping fees there to $30 a night. They're $26 a night now, and that would be just during the summer season. All right, the news of the week is brought to you, and again, links to all of this will be on our show notes page. Just go to rvlifestyle.com/258. This part of the podcast brought to you by Rad Power Bikes, an electric bike manufacturer offering direct-to-consumer pricing on powerful premium electric bikes with free shipping. They make a series of different e-bike models, the folks at Rad Power Bikes do. They fit every possible variety of rider wants and needs you can find. They all can go 20 miles an hour with zero pedaling. We like to use the throttle just when we need it. And it has five different levels of pedal assist, and it gives you a little added boost if you want. You can combine pedaling, and you can use the boost, whatever feels right to you at the time. They're really a lot of fun to drive. These e-bikes are perfect for people who want to get back into riding. Maybe you're recovering from surgery or injury or looking for a little extra boost to keep up with friends and family. You can go between 20 and 40 miles on a single charge. And the thing with Rad Power Bikes is they're less than half that of comparable bikes in the market, because the dealer retail markup is cut off. And if you mention RV Lifestyle at checkout, they'll give you an additional $75 off. Plus, you get free shipping on all their bike models. Use the coupon code RVLifestyle for an additional $75 off at radpowerbikes.com.
questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of RV reporters have the answers. Here's one of our questions of the week.
Hello, my question regards IV names, class A, B, C. How did that come about? Why is a class B smaller than a class A or a class B? Seems to be like A should be the biggest and C should be the smallest. Love to hear from you. I love your show. Thank you. Bye.
I've wondered that myself. That is a very
good
question.
If there is an answer anywhere.
Well, it's as I understand it, because I've asked that, the industry, and the industry doesn't like the words class A, class B, class C. They try very hard, politically correct among the RV Industry Association of America and groups like the Family Motor Coach, which you know are pretty closely tied to them. They want you to say type A and type B and type C, but they started off being referred to as class A, the big ones, because they're like first class, great big units. It's like a carrying your home with you on wheels. And where the confusion go is that the next one was class B, which is the traditional camper van. Now, you would think, you know, the class A or class B, okay, a B is smaller than an A, got that. But then along came class Cs, which are basically a box bolted on to a chassis. And those are always bigger than a class B. So there's where the confusion comes. And it gets even more confusion because a few years ago, the folks mostly at Leisure Travel Vans invented the term B+, which is what they call their versions. It's technically a class C, but it doesn't look like a C. It doesn't have that big cab overhang. And Jennifer thinks it should be named something else. You think it should be called?
Oh, I don't think it should be named something else. Somebody suggested that it really was a C-.
Because it's minus the overhang.
Yeah.
And it's a little...
C- sounds kind of negative.
Yeah, it doesn't seem quite as big as most of the pure class Cs, although it is. So Leisure calls theirs a B+. I think Pleasureway calls theirs a B+ now, too. So you have class A, class B, class C, class B+. And it can be very confusing. So confusing that we ended up doing a whole video series that shows and explains what you get with a class A, what you get with a B, a C, a C+, or a B+. I don't want to make it more confusing.
There will be a C+.
There probably will. I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, I'll put a whole link to all of that so you can go down and look at the videos we show you and explain what they have and why they are called that. And that's all on our YouTube RV Lifestyle channel. And links will be in the show notes for this episode. Just go to rvlifestyle.com/258. That's the episode number, episode 258.
Yes, Mike, thank you for the information about Channel 13 on the CB being used for RVs. I was wondering if it's possible to also use the new family channels or the GMRS channels, possibly figure out which one might work for RV travels. Also, the VHF ham channel, Simplex, a lot of people don't know about it. Just another possibility for traveling across the nation. Thank you.
We talked a little bit about this last week. We had a question from a listener who wanted to know about whether it made sense to use CB radios. And our answer was yes, it does, because you do need information about what's on the road ahead. And the truck drivers still have CB. They still use it. Now, the rest of the stuff that this caller was talking about had to do with two-way radio systems, and it can get very confusing, I know. Let me just try and break it down a little bit for you. CB radio essentially works on the AM band, and it's really low frequency. And it because of that, it's susceptible to lots of interference and noise and skip. You know, when radio signals bounce off the ionosphere and then sometimes they go thousands of miles and it can get really noisy. So AM and the CB radios kind of phased out at the 70s. They've always been stayed around with truckers, but the craze moved on with the internet and other things. There's also ham radio. Ham radio has been around since radio. And I'm an amateur radio operator. You have to be licensed by the FCC. And there's two different types of ham radio, essentially. There's lots of other variations of it. But there's essentially, when it comes to voice communications, HF, which is high frequency, and then there's VHF / UHF. And VHF, UHF is most normally FM, much clearer. And because they operate at a higher frequency that's not susceptible to the degree of skip as the lower frequencies are, it's much quieter. But you do need a license. Now, I've been licensed since I was a teenager. It's much easier to get a license. Almost anybody can get their entry-level license that will allow you to operate VHF or UHF. And those ham bands have a simplex, which is station-to-station frequency of 146.52. Here's the thing. I didn't even put it in this new unit of ours because I've had it in for 7 years and have heard no conversations on the road. None. I've been in traffic jams and I've given my ham call signs to anybody out there in the same jam. Never. Now, I know if I had had CB radio, I would have heard and known all about it. So that's why last week I advocated that we all get CB radios and let's start claiming, you know, put a little sticker on our back window, what channel you listen to, and we can go from there. All right, that's the background. Now, this caller's talking about two other kinds of radio service. The GMRS, that stands for General Mobile Radio Service, and you do need a license for that. All you got to do is pay the government $70 and sign a form. And you can use up to 50 watts for a signal for transmitting, which will give you, you know, quite a bit of miles up and down the road. And they're really nice radios. They come in walkie-talkies or handy-talkies, as the term is. I would very much consider getting one of those. You can get a really good one for like $250. But again, I don't think there's anybody on it. I don't think there's any ham radio, any RVers on it at all. I think it'd be just like the ham radio experience I had. So that's under the GMRS, which would be great. It would be very quiet. And it would be great signals, and it'd be awesome. But I don't think anybody would be on it on the freeway, unless we could talk hundreds of RVers into doing this next week. And I don't think that'd happen. Now, there's one other type he talks about, and you may already have one of these. It's the family radio system. Those are limited to 2 watts and can go maybe a mile under the right circumstances, usually a little less. They're not that good on the road. If you have a vehicle immediately in front of you, you could talk back and forth from there. A lot of RVers use that when they're backing into a campsite, you know, like if you're towing a vehicle and you have to back in, you got somebody back there with a little radio to tell you, turn left, turn right, whatever. So those make sense too. I think the simplest, easiest solution is to go right to CB radio, where at least you have the truckers on that channel 19. So I have tried in vain across all the states we're here in the South along I-10 and on I-75 to find somebody that can install them, and no luck. I think I can find somebody back in Michigan, but finding the time to do it now is going to be a challenge. So I think it makes sense to have one of them in a vehicle. And, you know, when you do need some communications, that would be nice to have. So how many times do we get stuck in traffic jams?
Often you wonder what's going on up ahead. It would be nice to know.
So anyway, I'd love your thoughts on this. Let's keep it going. Maybe we can start a movement. If I could pick which one I would do, I'd have all of us get on ham radio, because I already have that gear, and use 146.52 for ham radios. And ham radio is very easy to get. But short of that, the GMRS system that this guy suggested, our caller, makes a lot of sense. I just don't think there's nearly enough people on it that it would be very useful on the road. So there. All right, we have one more call and a comment. This came in a question we had last week, and we tried to take a high road in that question, and it had to do with carrying firearms in an RV that crosses state lines. And this is a very helpful call that came in from one of our listeners.
Mike and Jennifer, this is Doug Betts, not too far away down in Hartville, Ohio. And I just wanted to drop a note to you. I just got done listening recently to your most recent podcast about with a question from a listener about firearms in the motorhome and carrying those and the legality of it. And just wanted to make a couple of comments. One, Mike, I thought you did an absolutely superb job of handling a potentially controversial topic in just a excellent manner. No pros, no cons. Here are the facts. And it made me think of a resource that that I was made aware of. I have no connection with this particular guide. I just found it to be extremely helpful in looking at all of these issues associated with firearms in a motorhome. And I thought I would pass it on so that you might be able to pass it on to your readers for those that are interested in this particular topic. You can find this particular book on Amazon. It's called The 2019 Traveler's Guide to the Firearm Laws of the 50 States. It is produced annually and updated annually by the author J. Scott Kappas, K-A-P-P-A-S. He's an attorney here in the United States and specializes in firearms, and it is a very, very thorough guide covering all 50 states and covers everything from carrying, transporting weapons, ownership of firearms, the permit reciprocity, loaded versus unloaded, traffic stops, motorhome and RV issues, just a whole plethora of really valuable information to keep anybody who's interested in this topic on the right side of the law, which we all know is extremely important. And again, just wanted to say thank you for all you guys do for your podcast. I enjoy listening to it every week and look forward to the new episodes coming out. And just thought I would pass on a little tip that some of your listeners might be interested in and find useful. And from there, we'll say thank you and have a great day.
Okay. As we kind of said last week, it's a very touchy subject with a lot of people, and we are staying away from the politics of it. But if you do decide you need to carry a firearm in your RV, you need to know the law, and you might want to listen to that episode we did last week where we did talk a little bit about the law, particularly the part about is your RV considered your home or is it a vehicle, and when is it, if ever, your home? When is it a vehicle? That's in episode 257. And we will put a link, thank you for that call, to our listener, and we will put a link to the book he talked about. It's an excellent book. It's the 2019 Traveler's Guide to the Firearm Laws of the 50 States.
Hey, fellow travelers. Want to have your voice featured on the RV podcast?
Send us your questions or comments. Send an audio file to Mike at RVLifestyle.com. Or better yet, use our RV podcast voicemail number, 586-372-6990. 586-372-6990.
We want to hear from you. Call 586-372-6990.
This part of the RV podcast is brought to you by Battleborn Batteries, makers of quality, safe, and reliable lithium batteries that can be installed in just about every RV. We urge you to get in touch with Battleborn. Tell them what you have. They know your RV. They do this all the time, and they can help you with the right lithium batteries, where they should go. Most of the time, they're just replaced, just drop them right in where your current batteries are. They can help you upgrade your energy management system. They can really help you get out there and stay out there. To get to Battleborn Batteries, go to rvlifestyle.com/lithium. rvlifestyle.com/lithium. They make these awesome batteries that, and why do you want lithium? It's because the technology is so good with these batteries. They charge faster, they charge fuller, they last much longer, they're entirely maintenance-free, they come with a 10-year guarantee, and whatever you have, your existing components on your RV, whether it's a Class A, a Class C, a B van, whatever you have, whether you have a travel trailer or a cab over camper, they are experts in all kinds of RVs, and they offer different configurations for you, again, with that 10-year guarantee. We have Battleborn lithium batteries in our RV, Jennifer and I do, and we could not be more pleased with the system they designed for us. Actually, with the new, they have, we have a great new solar controller. We have an upgraded inverter. We've got some great Bluetooth technology that allows me to determine the health and condition of my batteries from my smartphone. We couldn't be happier, and we urge you to check them out too. Go to rvlifestyle.com/lithium. rvlifestyle.com/lithium. All right, time now for our interview of the week. And last week, Jennifer and I talked about the frustrations so many RV people have, and that is finding a campground and a campsite. And as we said when we did this survey, we've got a lot of other ones we'll be talking about, a lot of the other frustrations that you folks identified in those surveys we did. We'll be trying to do podcasts and videos around those topics going forward. But we thought we would jump in right this weekend and answer one of the bigger ones, which was the problem so many people have about overpriced campgrounds, and particularly the difficulty of finding a campsite without advance reservations. People are always surprised to know that Jennifer and I rarely make advance reservations. And yet we sometimes almost always find a great spot, whether we're boondocking or whether we're in a commercial or a government-run campground. Our guest in this Interview of the Week segment for this episode is Mark Kep. Mark is a full-time RVer. He travels with his family in a 44-foot RV. We'll have a picture of that on the RV travel blog. Just go to rvlifestyle.com, RV Lifestyle travel blog. You can see Mark's 44-foot RV, big fifth wheel he's got. Mark seldom makes reservations either, even though finding spots for such a huge rig are more challenging than what Jennifer and I experience. Mark runs an awesome and totally free website called campgroundviews.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. And it makes it so easy to find that perfect campsite without advance reservations. So I asked Mark to come on the podcast, if he would, and break it down for us step by step and show us just how we can find that perfect spot without advanced reservations. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being on the program today. And as I said in the introduction, camping, finding the right campground is right at the top of everybody's frustration when it comes to the RV lifestyle. And I know of no one better than you and your campgroundviews.com that can help us find that perfect campground this weekend. So, Mark, how do we do that?
Well, first off, thank you for allowing me to be on the show and speak to your guests. You know, we're campers. We actually started campgroundviews.com not because we were looking to make money, but because we were having the same frustration that a lot of your listeners have, which is it was a pain in the rear to find a campground. We've been full-time RVers for 10 years, and it was about 9 years ago where we first started running into the problems. We were using the normal sites that are out there, the review sites, to try to find campgrounds and RV parks, and we would literally spend hours and hours and hours just trying to find the right place. And so we've kind of built out systems, and we obviously built campground views with the whole idea being that if you can see a park, you'll know if it's right or wrong for you. But, you know, really that doesn't matter. Your guests, your listeners, they're wondering how they can actually find a camp this weekend. And so what I'd like to share is a few ideas on how to do that. So before I go there, let me give you some qualifications so you understand where I'm coming from, so that you know I'm not just making this stuff up. So first off, I mentioned I'm a full-time RVer. I've been doing it for 10 years. The unit we travel with is a 44-foot fifth wheel with four slides. We have two trucks that we drive along with. So we're not in a little van. We're in a big rig. And here's something that your listeners will find really interesting. We never make advance reservations, except for maybe if we're feeling like it's a little crowded, we'll make the reservation the day in advance.
Even with that big of a rig. Wow.
And so I think that's important to think about, so you know that I'm not making this up. And so what I want to share with your listeners is kind of the steps we go through. Now, obviously, our step one is our site, campgroundviews.com. We built it for ourselves, and we felt if it was useful for us, it'd be useful for other people. So
let's tell people how it works, because when we talk about views, you can actually see these campgrounds before you book, and you know, just give them a paint a picture for them so they understand what that looks like when they get on the site.
So the biggest pain in the rear in finding a campground is that there's so – if you go to the website of the campground, you'll find one of two things. One, a photo of some random angle that doesn't show you the campsite. Or number two, you'll find this really artsy picture that looks absolutely beautiful that you know you're not going to see when you get there. And so the whole concept behind campgroundviews.com was, hey, let's let everybody submit pictures. Everybody's got a phone. You can take a picture. And what we go for picture-wise is pictures of the sites, pictures of the roads, pictures of the amenities, the stuff that's – it's not really Instagram exciting, but it's practical and useful. And so that was where we started at. Since then, we've built up a library of 3,000 videos. These are shot by regular campers with their cell phones. They shoot the video, send it to us. We edit out license plates, faces, and put it back online so you can see what they look like. And we've since jumped into 360 video, and we have over 300 360 videos. We have all of the major Western national parks on video, so Yellowstone, Yosemite, Rocky Mountain National Park, Glacier, Grand Canyon. You can actually go see those campgrounds in 360 video, kind of like Google Street View meets video. And you should see some of the stuff we're working on now. We've obviously taken feedback and we're making it better. So that's kind of our mission. Our mission is to make camping amazing. And we believe you do that by allowing travelers, us, you know, you, me, other, everybody who's listening to this who likes to camp. We're tired of trying to interpret reviews. We're tired of guessing. We're tired of ending up at parks that are not right for us. So our total goal is to try to help that along. Are we perfect yet? No, but we're definitely working towards it. And we believe we have a really good tool. So that's where I start my search, is actually at Campground Views. And
all right, let's do it. campgroundviews.com, and no charge, right? You can just
– No charge, completely free. Yeah, go to campgroundviews.com, and when you hit that homepage, you'll see somebody with a pretty face looking at you, and you'll see a search bar there. The search bar is by location. And so if you want to test this out, I'd recommend starting out with Yellowstone, because this is a really good kind of discussion point, because – one of the things you'll read every season around the summertime is you'll read articles in the major newspapers. You'll see them on TV talking about how if you haven't booked already, you're not going to be able to go to Yellowstone, Yosemite, or fill in the blank for the popular spot. You won't be able to camp there. They start out with those stories. Usually around the springtime, they're good clickbait. They get a lot of clicks, and so they put those articles out there. So go to campgroundviews.com and enter Yellowstone National Park. You'll notice it autofills a little bit, so select it and then hit search. And when you do that, you'll go to a search page. And what I'll do is I'll drop down the radius. It defaults to 25 miles. I'll drop it down to 50, let the results refresh. And within 50 miles of the center of Yellowstone National Park, you'll see that there are 78 different campgrounds and RV parks within that 50-mile radius. If anybody's ever been to Yellowstone, you know that you're going to drive 50 miles just to get to the park entrance anyways. So, you know, staying 50 miles from Yellowstone is kind of, you know, par for the course. Unless you're lucky enough to get into Fishing Bridge, which, you know, was closed this summer. So,
that's right. That's right.
But you know, if you can get in Fishing Bridge, great. But the point being is, once I get into this tool, then I'll start going for it. You know, and Yellowstone's a really good example. We have a lot of video, a lot of pictures, a lot of content. And that's purposeful, because we know for a lot of folks, the first place ever going to go camping will be Yellowstone, Yosemite, whatever. So we focus on those areas first. And so we got some really good content there. But if it's an area where we don't have a lot of good content, maybe, you know, it's the middle of the country, middle of Kansas or something, you know, somewhere like that, we'll have the parks listed. And so from there, what I'll do is I'll kind of see, okay, here's a park. Let me do a filter, you know, because we have a big rig, I want to pull through. So I'll drop the amenities option, click for pull throughs. That'll filter down the results a little bit. And now I have a decision set that I can go through. My next step, and now this assumes that we don't have pictures, we don't have any content other than the park name. My next step is always to go over to a similarly named site, but a different site. It used to be RVParkReviews.com. It's now called CampgroundReviews.com. I'll go there next, and I'll start reading some reviews, and just make sure that it's somewhat. And this isn't the case when we don't have pictures or whatever. I'll start reading some reviews on it, and I'll also do some Google searches, kind of filter around. But the key question is, how do I get that campsite this weekend? So once I get this list, honestly and unfortunately, the next step is to call the park. And anybody who's ever tried to call a campground, you know this experience. You call that number, they're not going to answer. You know what I mean? They don't answer their phones.
I've never done that. Yeah.
And so what I do is I call. If they don't answer, I call the next one. If they answer, you know, if they answer here, in 9 times out of 10, this is my experience. This is why I don't make reservations. Hey, my name is Mark. I've got a 44-foot fifth wheel. I'm looking for a site for tomorrow, Saturday, you know, Friday night and Saturday at your park. 9 times out of 10, this is their response. Well, I just had a cancellation. We got a site for you. Perfect. Book it. You know, that's 9 times out of 10. Now, in the case where they're like, no, we're full. We've been booked for months. Okay. Hey, tell me, what parks in the area do you recommend for somebody like me? And depending on the owner's experience, you know, they may say, hey, call, you know, Jan down the street. You know, they're at XYZ camp, and then I'll give that campground a call. Unfortunately, that's the steps you have to go through for private parks. Now, a lot of folks don't camp at private parks. They camp at Forest Service and National Park campgrounds. This is where you have to get a little bit creative. So out of the – I think there's something like 8,000 federal campgrounds. I think that's the number. Only half of them are bookable. 4,000 of them are bookable on recreation.gov. And you can go on recreation.gov, search, and see them. And we'll have them listed on campground views, and you can link over to recreation.gov and search their availability. So you'll find that the very, very popular Forest Service campgrounds, those are booked way out in advance. You're not going to get there on the weekend. But a lot of those campgrounds also leave aside walk-up campgrounds, first come, first serve,
right,
on-site.
Right.
In that case, you do need to find the local ranger district number and give them a call and say, hey, I'm looking at, you know, whatever, you know, Tall Trees campground in the National Forest there. How many of those walk-up sites are currently taken now or as of your last check? They'll give you an idea. They might say, you know what, those sites never fill up and you're going to be completely fine. Or they might say, you know what, those sites are already booked. And then your next question is, okay, I've got a 44-foot fifth wheel. That park's booked. What are your first-come, first-serve campgrounds around there? And that ranger is going to give you, oh, you know what, this campground right down the road, it's never busy. There's like 3 sites there that can easily handle your rig. And obviously, I'm giving you a really bad example with a 44-foot fifth wheel. Yeah. Talking about Forest Service campgrounds, because they're probably going to say you're going to fit anywhere. But, you know, obviously, most people aren't traveling around in that big of a rig. They're traveling around in something, you know, in the 35-foot or less range. But, you know, knowing your unit, being flexible, you know, the next question we'll get from folks is they'll say, you know what, I absolutely need to be in fill-in-the-blank on fill-in-the-blank dates. If that's your requirements, then you need to book way in advance. You know, if you know you need to be in Vegas on 4th of July, then book it, you know, as far out as you can. But if you don't get it that far out, remember that a whole bunch of people did book that way in advance, and the likelihood of cancellations on that weekend is usually really high. And so you're going to find that if you're flexible, and this is winging it a little bit, I'll admit it. Some people need to have stuff planned and they need to know their exact route. And for those, they can ignore my advice and book way in advance. But if you're willing to wing it, if you're comfortable in your rig and you don't care super about where you're going to be staying at, then, you know, booking at the last second could really help you out a lot.
So it is possible to find a great camp spot this weekend. You just have to be a little creative. And I guess I remember from the last time I think we had you on the podcast is you made a really good point that when people think campgrounds, they think the state parks and, you know, the big, the familiar ones, the ones they know about. But what they don't know about is how many other campgrounds that maybe don't have big marketing budgets, but are delightful places, are out there and just waiting for them.
What I love about camping, and it's the reason why we love our business and what we do, is camping and the camping, and specifically these private park owners, it's the last mom and pop industry in this country. It you know, it's not corporate owned. You're dealing with all these individuals. That being said, because you're dealing with a lot of mom and pops, they have horrible websites. Again, they don't answer their phone. They don't advertise. They're hard to find. And there are so many of these campgrounds around. And usually, you know, a lot of folks, they know KOAs, and KOA has done an amazing job of revamping their entire line of parks. But with that, they've increased amenities and increased prices. So some folks will complain, you know, they've gotten too expensive. And that's fine. You know, if you don't want those amenities, you just want a place to camp, your options are a lot of these other individual privately owned parks that are located in all sorts of different areas all over the country, is doing a little bit of research and finding them. And so we've obviously, you know, got them all listed, or a large volume of them listed, but they're all over the place. Now, let me throw a qualifier on that. if you're in Los Angeles and you want to camp in Los Angeles, you ain't going to find it, because real estate prices in all the major cities have gone through the roof. It's just not financially feasible to open up an RV resort in a major city, you know, name it, Seattle, Portland, Los Angeles, you know, New York City. You're not going to find an RV resort opening there. And if one does, you're going to see the rates at $100 a night, because the option, you know, the flip side is they could have built a condo complex or something else. You know, it is a private business. They do have to pay taxes and registration, all that stuff. So they have costs associated with it. But if you, you know, the reason we love RVing is not to stay in Los Angeles. It's to go to some of these places that are out of the way, that are lesser known and so forth, like Yellowstone. You know, Yellowstone's great, but some of our favorite spots are towns like Dubois or Dubois.
Yes.
You know, great little town.
Dubois is a great cowboy town. Love that place.
It is.
Yep. And yeah, they have a couple of the best restaurants that I have eaten anywhere in that little cowboy town. Yep, that's great. Yep.
Lander, Wyoming, another perfect example of a small
too.
Town.
Yep.
People know. Yep. And so there's all these places around, and this one's hard. Really, I guess this would kind of go to the folks who are planning their 1-2 week trip this next summer, and they want it to be absolutely perfect. And so what happens is they go to Instagram, they go to Facebook, and they say, hey, we're going on a road trip. Where do we absolutely need to stop? And they'll get the big spots, you know. I invite people that, hey, yeah, you're going from, you know, Southern California to the Black Hills for your trip, and you want to cover that distance in 12 hours because you need to get there. You know, it's not mathematically impossible unless you're flying in a jet, but nonetheless, you want to get there as fast as possible. Maybe add on a few days of that trip and start looking for some of the out of the way places, the places that not a lot of people stop at, and you might find that, number one, you meet a different group of people. You meet people who aren't there on vacation. You meet the locals. You get to see the local stuff, and you get to have that experience that, honestly, I think RVing is all about, is actually getting down and really reconnecting with not only yourself, but this country itself.
Well, Mark, as usual, I appreciate your insight, and we'll send everybody to campgroundviews.com. We'll also link to the other sites that you talked about in the show notes. We always have a transcript of the interview. People can go back and click and check. All right, Mark up, campgroundviews.com. Thanks, Mark. It's always great to have you on the show.
Mike, thank you for everything you do.
The Spirit of the Podcast is brought to you by our friends at SunshineStateRVs.com in Gainesville, Florida, where every new motorhome is delivered to the customer free anywhere in the continental United States. SunshineStateRVs.com. That's the website you need to check out if you are in the market for a new or a used RV. They've got a full line of brand new RVs. They carry the Winnebago Travato, the Winnebago Era, Coachman brand, American Patriot, Fleetwood, IROC, and more. I mean, if you are looking for an RV, you want to check out SunshineStateRVs.com. And if you're looking for a used RV, well, you know how hard it is to find a good quality used RV. Check SunshineStateRVs.com's inventory. It's huge. They have the largest selection of used Class B and Small C RVs anywhere in North America. They have right now in stock previously owned RVs ranging from the early 90s to the current year, everything in between, from brands like Pleasureway, Winnebago, Leisure Travel, Coachman, Road Trek, and more. You will not find a wider selection. And when you do buy from Sunshine State RVs, you can rest assured that your vehicle has been checked out thoroughly, goes through a 172-point inspection. They road test them. They go over the interior components. They turn on everything, make sure it works the way it's supposed to. And so thoroughly cleaned and detailed inside and out, they even check the roof for cracks on their used RVs and replace any silicone caulking. You need to check them out yourself. SunshineStateRVs.com. Tell them you heard them talked about on the RV Podcast.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path, a unique RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
All right, this trip takes us to Indiana, French Lick, Indiana, to be exact, and our Off the Beaten Path correspondents, Tom and Patty Burkett.
Hi, Mike and Jennifer. We heard from Tom's sister that the West Baden Spa Hotel in French Lick, Indiana, was something to see, so when we were in the area, we detoured to have a look. The original hotel, the Mile Lick Inn, was built before the Civil War. The area's mineral springs had long attracted recreational and health-impaired visitors. The last renovation of the original building included a two-story pony and bicycle track, an opera house, and a casino. After that building burned in 1901, the current structure rose in its place. While the resort features every amenity imaginable, the showstopper is a central atrium 200 feet across with a fireplace that burns 14-foot logs and is ringed on the upper floors by the interior balconies of the guest rooms.
We hadn't seen any of this yet when we arrived in town to discover the lane leading to the hotel entrance flooded by French Lick Creek, which runs along the edge of the resort property. Heading into town, we were again turned back as the creek had flooded the downtown as well, blocking traffic on Indiana Route 56. There followed an hour of driving along various back roads looking for an accessible route into the hotel. After descending and ascending numerous hills, we worked our way around to the uphill side of the Donald Ross-designed golf course and finally reached the resort parking lot.
If you've ever visited an old-style resort hotel, this will look familiar to you. Many outbuildings house the staff and equipment for numerous outdoor pursuits, ranging from riding to archery, trap shooting to yoga. The hotel itself sports wide porches for enjoying the water view and taking in the seasonal breezes. Riding, cycling, and hiking paths spread out from the central complex, winding through a total of 4 high-end golf courses. You can't boondock in the resort parking lot, but just a few miles away is the Springs Valley Recreation Area, with several campsites on the shore of Tucker Lake.
The inside of the building, especially the atrium, is truly stunning. The roof soars overhead, splashed with stained glass windows, and numerous seating areas are sprinkled below it. 3 restaurants offer fine and casual dining. In mid-afternoon, we opted for dessert and coffee. The massive Indiana stone fireplace was nearby, but not lit on this temperate day. Oversized seating, couches and chairs, gigantic tropical plants, and impressive statues made the room feel more cozy and less cavernous. The afternoon felt a bit like a European getaway, and it seems that was the designer's intent, echoing the Baden-Baden resort in Germany.
For a truly out-of-the-way town, French Lick has an interesting history. The medical power of the sulfur springs was bottled as Pluto water, a popular laxative in the early 1900s. The resorts and casinos drew characters like Al Capone and Joe Louis, and Irving Berlin was a regular entertainer. Both the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox held spring training here during World War II. An NBA star, Larry Bird, still holds the high school scoring record at Springs Valley High, his hometown school.
Nothing will get you to this part of Indiana except a desire to see things like this. You can drop south off US 50 or head north from Interstate 64 and drive through the Hoosier National Forest. It's just miles of trees, lakes, small towns, and scattered gems like the West Baden Hotel. Come see for yourself out here off the beaten path.
All right, that's Tom and Patty Burkett. We'll put a picture of the that beautiful hotel atrium in the show notes for this episode, and you can find it. And all the links and all the resources we've talked about during the whole program, you can find that on the show notes page, which is rvlifestyle.com/258. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the RV Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
And that wraps up another episode of the RV Podcast with Mike and Jennifer Wendland.
New episodes are released every Wednesday, and the best way to stay connected is to subscribe to the RV Podcast.
We're in all the popular podcast apps, and you can also listen on the RVLifestyle.com travel blog.
Till next time, happy trails, fellow travelers. We'll be looking for you down the road.
All right, thank you guys so much for tuning in. We appreciate it as we always do. Look for our video of the week coming up this Thursday. We're going to talk about interesting places that you can stay, you can overnight, or find, unexpectedly find, RV amenities, places to get gas, propane gas as you're driving along, maybe a dump site. Anyway, I think you'll find, we're going to highlight 3 of them that we have found just this summer that we've come across, and give you some ideas to look for some other interesting places that you may want to overnight as you're traveling from place to place. On behalf of my wife, Jennifer, and our dog, Bo, I'm Mike Wendland. Thank you guys so much for listening. Drive safely out there, and we'll see you down somewhere off the beaten path. Happy trails, fellow travelers. Happy trails.